I can't tell you how many times we've heard over the years at KEXE, KBXE, when people call us that they used to go to a family cabin in northern Minnesota. And that, you know, there may be somebody who doesn't even come back here, but they found KEXE somehow. They listen to the station because it reminds them of their cabin.
Yes.
And when they say the word cabin, their voice changes, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
There's history, there's nostalgia, there's memories all wrapped up in the word cabin. There's a new book out, explores 37 cabins, all kinds, old and new. It's published by Taunton Press, and the author, Dale Mulfinger, is a Minnesota author. He's a cabinologist, John. The books is called The Family Cabin, Inspiration for Camps, Cottages, and Cabins. Today he joins us from his cabin on Lake Vermilion. Well, thanks so much for being with us today. We are excited to talk about cabins, and I think we have to start with where you're sitting right now.
I'm sitting in my cabin, Lake Vermilion, on the west end. I'm looking out at a gray day, wondering whether I can get to my landscape project this morning, or whether or not it'll dump rain on me before I get out there. But, that's where I am.
What's your cabin like?
I've got kind of a modest cabin. It's relatively new. We built it about 15 years ago, and it's got two bedrooms, two baths, and a little loft, and a living room, dining, kitchen area, and a screen porch. And it's tucked into a hill, so when you arrive, you're actually arriving up on the second floor, and there's a stairway down to the main living level. And it's banked into the hill to protect it from the northwest winds. And all of the glass area of the cabin pretty much looks either southeast or southwest. So it gets really good passive solar gain.
Wow, Dale, that sounds good. You're painting a good picture. So, Dale, what's the difference between... Because everything you said is in a home. So what's the difference? Just smaller scale?
Yeah, I think the scale has something to do with it. It's a very woody character. It's very open, so you're not very concerned with auditory privacy, which you might be in a home. I think in a home you try at times to get away from the activity of the house, so you need places to go off to. And in a cabin, that isn't typically the case. It's all about bonding with people, and so you're gathered together, and the cabin kind of promotes people being gathered together. You smell the coffee in the morning because it's brewing about 10 feet away from your head.
So, Dale, who uses your cabin?
We own it with another couple, unrelated. That is to say, we're not family in a blood sense, I guess. They use it, we use it, and our children use it. Because it's 4 hours from where we all live in the Twin Cities, you know, it doesn't get used every weekend. But get used quite a bit right on through the year. And we can be here with about a dozen other people because we have a little old guest cabin. There was a log cabin on the property when we arrived without any running water. So that serves as kind of overflow guest cabin for us.
So we want to get to the book, but this is so fascinating. So who took part in the design of this? Was it a mutual thing or was it... Did you pick up this family later?
That's a complex story because, of course, you have four adults and they have to agree.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of the active designer. I'm the practicing architect. And, however, the other husband is a scholar architect from the university who knows how to criticize but does not necessarily know himself how to, you know, advance a design. And so we had to create an interesting methodology so that this could progress. And the essence of the methodology is we always said there was a date to every decision and it had to be made by 10 o'clock on April 3rd. And, you know, you couldn't violate the date of the decision. You could just change your mind about what went up to that date. So everything got done and everybody loves it. And it's great.
What were the worst parts of it? Were there any times where there was like not friction, but just couldn't make a decision?
Yeah, every once in a while it seemed like one of us would step forward with imminent veto power. And you kind of realize then that even though that was a minority vote, you weren't going to change their mind. So I think we were all pretty agreeable folks, and we knew when to when to choose our battles, and we all wanted to make it happen. I mean, that's the critical thing. You have to want it to occur.
Is scheduling ever tough?
No, not at all. We happen to pick another couple where the husband is from Germany, and they go to Europe every summer for a couple months.
Nice job.
No, huh?
Nice job. You're no dummy.
In fact, they went a little later this year, so they're over there right now. So they're probably going to miss some of the early fall up here together.
Wow.
But we really don't have a problem scheduling. Each couple has maybe a one or two special weekend. Like, I really love being at the cabin on July 4th because there's a phenomenal fireworks show down the lake that I love to go off to. And they love to be here on New Year's Eve. They have a few friends that they regularly come up here with. So, you know, there are a couple special weekends. But other than that, we just check in with each other to make sure we're not conflicting. And occasionally we're here together. We really enjoy each other's company. So
that's great.
That works out well, too.
Wow. We're talking to Dale Mulfinger today. He has a new book out. It's called The Family Cabin. He's an architect. He's a cabinologist. He's an author. And we're going to talk about some of the things in there. Dale, how is your life? How are you different when you're at the cabin? How are things different?
I sleep more.
Mm-hmm.
probably because I don't have to rush up and get rolling and commute into work or something like that. So, yeah, in Minneapolis, I probably get about 7 hours sleep, and up here, I probably get more like nine. and I think I'm outside a lot more up here. I'm out doing things, either out fishing or putzing like today with this landscape project. I'm just doing more things with my hands. And we don't have any screens here, so there's no TV screen, no computer screen. You can bring your iPhone or something like that, but so we don't turn on a television. We don't, turn on a big computer.
Wow.
So you don't have a 65-inch flat screen up there watching the Minnesota Twins or anything like that?
No, that's about 2 miles away at the Landing Bar and Restaurant.
So that sounds fun, though. Head over there. Hey, I got a question for you. I understand what a camp is. I understand what a cabin is. What is the difference between a cottage and a cabin?
Mostly where they are located in the geography of North America.
Oh.
So if you happen to take the same structure, well, let's say we plant it over near Hayward, Wisconsin, and if a Minnesotan owns it, they're going to go off to their cabin for the weekend. If they sell that structure to somebody from Milwaukee, the people from Milwaukee are going to go off to their cottage for the weekend.
Nice. It's like popping soda, John.
Yeah, right. Popping soda.
And then if you take that same structure and you slide it out into either the Adirondacks or in Maine, people might say, "Oh, we're going off to our camp."
Ah.
If you take that camp project in Maine and slide it over to the ocean, they're probably going to say we're going to our cottage. So it's more to do with kind of geography and the where the people come from.
All right, let's get into some of these camps, cottages, and cabins that you featured in the book. Where do you want to start, John?
Oh, my gosh, I don't know. I love this one. It's in North Carolina.
Oh,
in,
sure.
In search of a mountain cabin. It's just so simple. It has cedar shakes on the side, a metal roof, two stories, rectangular, very simple, but just really, really elegant.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Appalachian Mountains are a great location to find cabins all along the Appalachian Mountains from West Virginia down on through North Carolina all the way, down into the Asheville, even down into northern Georgia. And that one, I think the one you're looking at probably happens to be the folks who have they're avid trout fishermen.
Yeah.
And they were actually from further north, so they have a fairly significant drive to get to it. But they were looking for great trout streams and needed to find some land near one of those trout streams. So that was their goal.
I'm just trying to wonder. Some of these are so nice, so nice. And I'm just wondering, with your building of your cabin, I don't know what your cabin looks like, but is there a common trait in cabins or cottages? Is there any mistakes you made in building yours? You know, not a mistake structurally, but sure. Is there anything you missed or wish you would have done differently that needs as a staple as far as what a cabin or a cottage is?
We could have probably had a couple of extra feet in our living room area. And I think that's about all. I think otherwise it works extremely well. It's very efficient. It's laid out very effectively. It gets very good light. So we really don't have any significant complaints about, maybe the other thing would have been to make the porch a tad bigger. We have a porch just big enough for a table and chairs.
Okay.
And not a soft chair or lounge chair in addition to that. And we live on that porch all summer long. So, you know, I think outdoor, living out in the fresh air is a great part of what cabin life can be about, and we probably would have made the porch a bit bigger.
You know what else? I like this stealth cabin.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's really cool. It's not giant. It's just gets everything done, though.
Yeah, it's up in Canada, and there are some great cabins up in Canada, all the way across Canada. And that one's a fun one for a doctor and her husband and their family. And it's very simple, and it takes the name Stealth because it's kind of sleek and yet wrapped in wood. It's in an enclave of other cabins about an hour and a half, I think, from their home.
Wow. So are there any Minnesota cabins in the book?
Yes. You know, there's one owned by Debbie Edwardson. It's in Elbow Lake, which is fairly close to my end of Lake Vermilion. And I think the interesting story about that is that this woman grew up going to a cabin on an island in Elbow Lake and had several family members who had their own cabins. And as she became an adult, and after graduation from college, she went to teach up in Alaska and fell in love with an indigenous person up there. And now she lives in Point Barrow, Alaska. Oh, no. Now, if you know your geography, you know Point Barrow is the most northerly point way up on the Arctic Sea. And she leaves Point Barrow in the summertime to come down to her island cabin at Elbow Lake. It's a very simple, it's a family cabin in the sense that it's been passed along through the family. And it's a delightful one. It has some features. One of the more unique features is it uses some vertical log elements in it, and vertical log was kind of an old French trapper's way of building a cabin. So it's a combination of both vertical log and horizontal log. There were a couple of reasons to feature it, but one was the vertical log, and the other was the nature of the family that uses it.
You know, one of the things when you build a house is you always seem to get carried away with a bedroom. It's got to be real big or whatever. And it seems like cabins are not that much. And I think it's just for what you said. When you're at a cabin, you're busy, you're doing stuff. And it seems like the bedrooms or even the beds just aren't that major of a role. You know, they're not huge.
Right. I think you don't necessarily sleep in the same bedroom all the time.
Yeah.
I like to suggest in a cabin you sleep around. And you should have places in your cabin like a window seat long enough for somebody to sleep in. So when you have extra people, they just sleep anywhere. You know, they throw a cot on the floor. And bedrooms aren't something that people are going to hang out in during the day. You might have one bedroom reserved with a little extra space where somebody can go read a book quietly or something like that. But by and large, you really don't need much more than the bed and enough space to get around it to make the bed.
We're talking about some of the important elements of cabins. You know, you've mentioned a porch, and how important are windows?
Windows are very important, and I've never had I've designed many cabins. And no client has ever asked me to take out an extraneous window, but they have occasionally asked me to add another one. And unfortunately, today we have very good windows, so that is to say they perform well from an energy point of view. So having a lot of windows is important, knowing where to put them and making a special little window to add a dabble of light where you might not expect it all seem to be important. I think in our area in the Midwest, particularly where we build cabins on lake, a lot of people feel they have to have windows that rise high up in the air. And I think that's a bit of a misnomer. If we're building along the lake, what we want are a horizontal development of windows because we're seeing a panorama of the water. we don't necessarily need to see more and more and more clouds. I'm a big believer of a horizontal banking of windows.
And you also have a cute one, the We in the Wilderness, because it seems like the tiny house has taken over the world, and a lot of these cabins or cottages you're showing are quite nice and quite large. I love the little We in the Wilderness thing.
The We in the Wilderness is a fun little project, 27 feet by 14 feet, story and a half, so it has a loft at either end. So they have a family of five, three boys and a couple, and the couple's at the loft at one end, and the three boys are at the other end with a little bridge in between, steep stair to get up to it. It's basic living. It's off-grid, so they have gas-powered, say, refrigerated stove, but they do not have electricity and no running water and, you know, no bathroom. So they have a outhouse and a sauna. It's a beautiful little structure made by the We Cabin Company out of Ely. So that's why we named it the We Ely. There's another one. I want to talk about another one that's in our region, which is here on Lake Vermilion, because it has long fascinated me. And so cabin that's about, I think it's about 65 years old. And the essence of the story is a fellow from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, comes up and stays at a resort a couple of times, and then he buys a parcel of land, and the resort owner is also a carpenter building cabins in the wintertime. So he hands the carpenter, you know, some X amount of money. One might imagine it's in the range of $3,500 or something like that, probably not a lot back then. And he says, build me a cabin. I want all the rooms to face the water. And then he leaves, and he expects to come back in the spring, in the summer, and see what he got. And what he got was something akin to one of those old motels where all the rooms have their own door to the outside, and in this case, you walk out under a covering, but you walk outside to get to the bathroom or to go off to the living room. And you kind of immediately think, well, that's not going to work. Well, it's worked for 65 years. The family now in its third and fourth generations love it. They haven't changed it, and it's spectacular. And, of course, back then they could build 30 feet from the water. Nobody cared much then, and so the lapping waves are right there. And it's a fun, fun structure.
John's just staring. It's almost like he's sitting in this living room. I don't know which cabin this is.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I'm looking at the one. It's called the Modern Cabin or whatever, and it's got that giant window looking over
the bank of windows.
Yeah, it looks like you're 9 feet from the lake. It's a fall scene. I mean, how can you not be lost in something like that?
There's some great property out there in the world, and a lot of these cabin owners have managed to find it. And their designers, builders, whatever, were able to figure out how to really capture the spirit of it, too.
Okay, so you've done all these. You've seen all these cabins, cottages. What is mandatory to have in a cabin? Just mandatory. I mean, do you need, you don't need big... I'll let you answer it.
I don't know that there's a singular mandatory thing that stands out that says that you have to have this. I think it has to be sufficiently compact and accessible, that, you know, easily accessible. But I can't think of there isn't sort of like one ingredient.
Yeah.
So the little metal sheds in Texas are
yeah.
Like a little motel room, and they have their collective. Kitchen dining room as a separate building they walk off to. So it's like a little commune of cabins. So they don't need much other than a bathroom, a little sitting area, very minimal, and a bed in kind of one room living. And then there are some that are quite large. There's one in there that I designed for two twin sisters. They each have husbands, and they each have four children.
Oh, my gosh.
And they like to bring mom and dad along, or grandma and grandpa. Well, that's a fairly good-sized group of people, let alone the fact that they probably often bring the Girl Scout troop, or, you know.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, a family cabin can be large as well, which is one of the reasons why I named this book The Family Cabin, was I wanted to show the breadth of size, you know, that it can be that small little 27 by 14, or it can be approaching, you know, 2,800, 3,000 square feet, because you've just got a huge group of people that show up and they need rainy day activities and stuff like that. They need space for other things to occur.
That's Dale Malfinger. He's a architect, cabinologist, and author. The new book is out. It is called The Family Cabin, Inspiration for Camps, Cottages, and Cabins. I think we could talk all day, Dale, but you'd need your cabin time. We appreciate you talking with us.
Well, great. Great to be on again.
Thanks a lot.
Two for Friday.